Can you hear yourself now?
Let me hear. No.
Ninth time's the charm. Holy fuck nuts.
Holy shit. Holy fuck nuts. Holy fuck gut. That was a lot.
That was freaking fuck gut.
That was freaking fuck gut. That was a fuck gut moment.
The weirdest angle where like my...
Don't move. What are you doing moving right now? No, Quinn, you're moving your computer? You idiot.
I don't know how to talk in microphone and see you. I'm having to like do this. Do you think this is sustainable?
No. All right, let's see. Adjust. Hey, adjust. Let's see what happens.
I adjusted.
Do you feel better?
No. I feel on edge.
You know what? How hot are you right now?
I have the air conditioning on. I'm fine.
Okay, good. Because me? Look at this. Central air queen.
I know. You've got long sleeves on. You look like a fucking serial killer.
I know. It's so fun. It's fun to just leave New York and realize central air conditioning is the way of the future. And
leave your heat stroke behind, folks. I had to work in Central Park yesterday.
No.
And I was dizzy. And it was crazy because I was running like a team building thing. And the woman that the client for a very prestigious New York place was like very casually was like, instead of ending at the park, let's end at Tommy Bahama's Marlin Bar. And I was like, okay, because that means that I had to leave the park immediately and go sit in that bar to wait for the people to finish.
She did you the biggest fucking favor of your life.
And I looked like it's a very bro-y Wall Street vibes. It's like on 45th. Yeah. It's fancy. I went in. I was in this back room by myself for like an hour running the game. And I looked like I did not belong. I was asked by many people, who the fuck was I?
You were not.
Not in that, no. They are very nice there. But it had, like, a vibe. Like, I was wearing, like, a crazy gym outfit. And, like, my hair was askew. And I was covered in sweat. And I had, like, a very weird water bottle. And I did a thing where I was starving. But I obviously was not going to buy anything. So in my backpack, I opened a bag of chips. And then just to not have a bag of chips out, I was just reaching my greedy little hand as fast as I could in and out of my backpack, shoving chips in my mouth at such a rate that my shirt was covered in chips. And they were like, you don't belong here. And I was like, I know.
Quit. That's some dark shit. That feels...
It's so funny because I mean, it's really interesting because women were going back to use the bathroom that were like our age and they had like outfits on and really expensive shoes and stuff and like... They just look like they get a lot of things done on their face. And they're, like, going back to use the bathroom. And they're ordering really expensive glasses of wine and little hors d'oeuvres. And I'm watching them. And I'm like, do I want to be you? As I shove more chips in my mouth. Crunch, crunch. Do I? And I was like, you know what? It doesn't matter. You couldn't do that.
The
You're an actor.
Existential crises.
And you still could never be them.
You could never. I mean, you know what? That existential crisis I've encountered many a time, because that feeling of feeling inadequate, that like, to me, that moment brings up like a very junior high feeling of me where I feel like I'm like with the popular kids.
It actually makes me feel really young. Like I'm 20 and they're 40, which is incorrect. We're all 40. So it's this funny feeling where I'm like, old women, like they're so fancy. I'm like, you're their age. You have no money.
You have two children at home waiting for you.
They're eating ahi. Relax.
What kind of chips were they? I mean, we were burying the lead.
Something
here.
Someone brought to the barbecue the other day.
Which
I
ones?
Don't know. I think they were just like salty scoopers that I was scooping nothing with because I'm that poor. Scoop in the air, baby.
I just love the idea of you in gym clothes in this like bougie place where everybody's in full like Lily Pulitzer.
Chips all over.
Yeah, and
my
you
face.
Just have like corn chips and they're like, ma'am, did you pay for those? And you go, if they're not free, I didn't buy them here. I only eat free food now.
Okay, wait. Can I say something?
Yeah.
whatever you're about to say, let it be something we can put in the podcast, because we now have been recording with only me having technical difficulties. Us talking this about can stuff be in the we podcast. Can't put in the pod.
This can be in the pod. This can
great.
Be. Okay.
Then continue by all means.
I just got an email. So do you remember how I got invited to the U.S. Embassy?
Oh, the food truck party?
The food truck party of yesteryear? Well, get this. I just got an email from my contact, who's truly just like the nicest person in the world. I really fucking like her. Anyway, she's going to be in Edinburgh this August, and she's like, hey, do you want to go to a reception at the U.S. Consulate General? Gwen, I'm dead.
Why is she inviting you to these things?
She, like, we saw, like, at the, she's like, we're friends now, and we are friends now. I genuinely, okay. She's really cool. I like
it's
her.
It's fun to have friends in high places.
But I'm going to be going to a U.S. Consulate reception in Edinburgh? Like, what am I doing? I'm going to the U.K. What's crazy is I keep going to the U.K., and going to fucking U.S. affairs.
Yeah, themed. What is going themed on parties. There?
I'm also just like, maybe we could sell tickets to our show. Let's fucking go.
I mean, you and I both say yes to
everything.
Any invitation. Everything. Sadly, so I guess you're going.
Sadly
and I can't
is
wait
no.
to hear about it.
I, you know,
sometimes,
I had a friend,
sadly. Sometimes I come home from things and I'm like, you know,
shouldn't
you
have
can
done
say,
that.
In the mirror, I'm like, you can say no sometimes.
Do you say that? I feel like you say no.
To myself.
I think you... Okay. I think you say no more often than I do. But I also think you and I are both creatures of joy from free shit. I think you and I, like, free food and drink will trump any sort of, like, issue.
It's really crazy. But it's like, that to me is also, like, not adult in a way that is wild. Like, I've always been that way. Like, I remember... thinking I kind of wanted to try to graduate later early, because when I was at Sarah Lawrence, I went to a reception for people that graduated mid-year and they got past hors d'oeuvres instead of a buffet. And it was so good that I was like,
maybe I
should
do this.
I try to push my graduation. Like, I would do anything for a past hors d'oeuvre in a way that is dangerous and alarming.
But it feels good. I mean, you have to know. It must feel good that, like, I invite you to all my past hors d'oeuvres events, because I know.
Oh, I live for it.
I know you. I know you will always be say yes, and you're always a good time gal. Here's the thing. I think.
Should I just get a job at a catering company so that I can, like, eat past hors d'oeuvres behind the scenes?
Oh, my God. The amount of times that I've catered and my cheeks have just been,
and
like,
you're shoving your chipmunking
off. And you're not even tasting it.
And they're like, what is this that I'm eating? And you're like, it's really watermelon gazpacho.
It's heirloom tomato BLT. I'm
delicious.
Telling you, I got in 2 nights ago. I flew in, got in really late in Chicago. And the next morning I went grocery shopping. And I'm telling you, after not being able to, like, stay at home
have
and
a fridge
eat
full
meals,
of food.
Yeah. Like, I mean, the nice thing about the UK, here's my fun little cheat hack. The fun thing about the UK is their eggs are not pasteurized. So they're not refrigerated. So whenever we would travel, we could keep just eggs in the car, which was which is kind of amazing on the road. Because if you're like, oh, I can boil an egg, I can just do a hard boil, whatever.
Or if you're mad and you just want to, like, egg someone
yes,
real quick.
Yes, exactly. Totally. But for legal purposes, I cannot confirm or deny that. That being said, the joy of grocery shopping is so fun for me. I'm just like...
Oh, me too. I love grocery shopping. And I love, like, I love grocery shopping out of town, especially.
Oh.
Like, being in a grocery store I've never been in before.
Yes.
And I'm always convinced they have, like, magical things I've never seen.
Yes. Because
so
they do.
Weird.
They do.
I guess they do, yeah.
I mean, I made my delicious tuna salad that I really love. That's Molly Boz's recipe. Love that tuna salad. And then I also made my dad homemade hamburger helper last night. You know, I'm just trying to pull my weight. And I really, it just is fun to cook, not just for me, but for other people. And to be like, ugh, it's so therapeutic. I just love it so much.
Come cook for me anytime.
Okay.
Did you have fun at the barbecue?
I had so much fun at your barbecue. It was a rager.
Did you really?
I did. Of course. Of course I did.
I can't tell.
I mean, it was wild to see everybody. It felt like it was crazy to me because your event was, like, the first event I was around people I haven't talked to in 3 months. Do you know what I mean? Like, it was, and it was a lot of people. And it was, it amazed me how I felt like no time has passed. And
especially
also
between you and Griff.
Okay. We got to get a shout out to Griff Dog.
That I think kid, every episode every is a episode shout out to is Griff a shout out to in Griff. Some way.
He, you guys, I, Griffin, we know Griffin is a little king, which is to say, like, you're in or you're out. You know what I mean? Like, he...
off with their heads.
Off with their heads. Like he's... Sure. Do you know what I mean? He's like, I don't want to see you. I'm not interested in you. And sometimes when you come in, after not seeing him for a long time, because, you know, since I leave often... Whenever I come back, he's just a little baby. Like, he's not really remembering as much or is kind of just, like, he's so present.
He's stoic.
And so he's quite stoic. So when I showed up in the backyard, I was, like, so stoked to see Ozzy and Koa and, like, Griff. You know, I just, like, kind of, like, kissed the ring. But I'm telling you, Quinn, you saw it, and it makes me so happy. Griffin, like, got excited.
Before he knew what he was doing, he went to hug you, like, which I've never seen him do.
He opened his arms and just, like, went towards me and, like, got so confused about why his nature. Body, yeah, why his body was going into a hug for me.
Muscle memory. Yeah.
And then he, like, looked at you and was like, "Is this okay, Mama?"
He "What am I doing?" I was like, "You can hug her. It's okay." And he's like, "Oh God."
And then I picked him up and I gave him a hug, and he, like, still was a little like, I like this. I knew he liked it.
He was like...
But he was confused by why he liked it. He felt safe around me, but he was not totally sure why. And it felt a little foreign to him.
I think so, too.
Which he made me...
like, why do I have this feeling toward you?
Yeah, like, I don't... Like, I know you, but I also am like, who... There's going to be a party with a lot of people here. Am I going to feel this way about everyone? Like, this feeling...
He didn't.
And he decidedly didn't. But it made me so happy. And at one point, our friend Jess brought her baby, who is so fucking cute, 9 weeks old, doing so well, so wonderful. And of course, like, all of us got to love on this child, which was amazing. But Griffin was, like, looking at the baby. And I was like, Griffin, like, I remember when you were this little, I held you. And so I was like, would you like to see some pictures? And he was like, yes. So I, like, showed him all these pictures of us when he was growing up. And he was like, that's my favorite. He kept going to pictures of just me going, that's my favorite. It's like, Griff, love you, dude. He and I were buddies. I loved it. I loved
every
second.
And then he said goodnight to you from the balcony. You had, like, a Romeo and Juliet moment.
Oh, my God.
Too.
And it was great because everybody was saying goodnight. He said goodnight to everyone. And then I just was, like, waving, looking. And after everyone had said goodnight, he just goes, goodnight, Kaoi.
So cute.
It made me so happy. I mean, listen, feel like he knew I
he
was leaving.
Your heart.
He knew I was leaving, and he was trying to guilt me, and he was smart. He was smart about it.
Because he felt horrible.
I hate leaving people, and I do it all the time.
It's your hobby.
It's actually, like, the best was ever.
You're runaway bride.
I am runaway bride. I am Julia Roberts. Hear me run. Don't actually ever hear me run. It's not a pretty sight, or it's not a pretty
clomp,
sound.
Clomp.
Glumping.
Glumping.
Carrie glumps so gracefully.
Carrie glumps gracefully away.
You all don't know why we're laughing so hard, but it's
we had to
really
cut that, but it's really
funny.
Good. Trust us.
If you knew.
Trust us. Don't you guys love when we do private jokes at you? We forget you're here sometimes, but we're also glad you're here. And now a word from our sponsors.
Bye. And that's the end of the episode.
Hey, we're back, and we have a Patreon to thank. Their name is Susan H.
Susan H. Susan H. Susan H.
Susan, Susan, you're not cruising for a bruising. You're cruising for a friendship like Tom Cruise. Just kidding. We're not really friends with him. Hashtag Siri forever. Did you see he missed her graduation? That's kind of fucked up. That's your kid, dude. Can't you get over whatever happened with Kate, you gotta move on, you gotta quit with the hate. Susan, this really got off the rails. I really love you, Susan, you are my holy grail.
Susan, you are not a suppressed person either. You are such a fun gal and a good time, fun to party. Let's hang out in real life.
Will you be our wife? The end.
The end. No, I said the end.
No, I said at the end. Who goes first? I'm here to tell you this story. of Sarah. No, that's the short one. I'm here. Redo. Redo, redo.
Erase,
I'm
erase.
Here to tell
erase,
you.
Erase. Wait, Quinn, wait. What a great tease for next week's episode. If you want to hear the story of Sarah, never mind.
Oh.
Come back next week.
And you will. You will. But today, you won't, because you're listening to Truly
Darkly
Creeply. We're disorganized, both of us.
But we're
and our names are Quinn
here.
And Carrie.
And I'm Carrie, and that's Quinn. But we're here, okay? Stop yelling at us, guys.
God, stop. We're doing our best.
We're doing the best we can.
No, we could do better, but we won't. So
no.
It doesn't matter.
Can I tell you the joy I feel whenever I finish researching a story for this week's episode, and I'm always like, taking it off my to-do list feels so good.
Oh, totally.
Do you know that
I
feeling?
Agree. Yes, I do. And I'm trying to like bank some research so that this summer can be a little bit chill factors. You guys are going to notice that actually in future episodes when I don't know what I'm talking about because I researched it 2 months ago. I'm going to be like, wait, what happened? I'm going to be like hearing the story with you as I say it.
The worst.
It's going to be
like,
very exciting.
I will start doing research and I'm like, fuck, there's not enough, but it's a fun story. And so I'm like, do you guys want me to do fun little short stories sometimes? Sure, but I'm not going to do that. I don't know. That's for Teeny Tiny Creek, please. I don't know.
I don't know either. I think it's up to us, weirdly, because here's the spoiler alert. We're not getting paid
enough
so
to do this. So, yeah, it's got to be up to us. Okay, moving on.
Wikipedia, Newsweek, all that's interesting in Psychology Today have brought you the story I am about to tell that is in Rochester, New York, and it starts in 1971. So, it's November, and 10-year-old Carmen Colon is running an errand. She goes to the pharmacy sometimes to pick up prescriptions, and in this case, she's going to pick up one for her grandma. And usually her grandpa Felix goes with her. Love that name, by the way. But today, Felix doesn't go with her. In fact, Carmen sort of begs her grandparents to, she's 10. Come on, let her go to the pharmacy alone.
She's an adult.
She knows what
she's
doing.
An adult.
She's an adult.
She's 10 years old. She's a grown up. Move on.
So she goes to collect it, and the pharmacy's like, we actually haven't processed it yet. Sorry. And she says to the store owner, I gotta go, and leaves. Witnesses see her get into a car that is parked close to the pharmacy.
Okay.
50 minutes after they see this, there are other drivers on Interstate 490 that witness a child, they say, no pants and underwear on, running from a vehicle. The vehicle is described as a dark-colored Ford Pinto. This child is upset, frantically waving her arms, running.
Okay.
She's trying to get a car to stop to help her. And I am telling you that these witnesses that tell of this story are people that say they saw this happening.
And they did not stop.
But did not stop. They did not stop. One of them saw her be grabbed by the person that was in that vehicle and get drugged back in. We don't know who that driver was. What we do know is Carmen Colon does not return home. And at 8 o'clock that night, her mom reports her missing. 2 days later, her body is discovered, partially nude, down in a gully, right outside the village of Churchville, which was about 12 miles from where she was seen on the highway.
God.
They do an autopsy. She was raped. She has a fracture to her skull and one of her vertebrates. And they say it looks like what happened is that after she was raped, she was strangled. There's also lots of scratches on her body that look like they come just from being scratched by a person. Everybody's pissed when this hits the news because everybody's like, wait, hold up. You have a bunch of people that saw this kid in peril running. Nobody stopped to help. What in the damn world? People are freaking out and they're like, somebody's going to pay for this. So they're issuing a reward. They're putting up billboards with her picture and they're not getting anywhere. About a year and a half after this happens, 11-year-old Wanda Walkowitz goes to a deli for an errand. It's about 5 o'clock at night, and she's trying to grab groceries for her family. She has a little list, and she does not return home. At 8 o'clock that night, her mom reports her missing. But this is taken very seriously, I think, because it's, again, in near Rochester, and they're aware that this happened to Carmen. So about 50 detectives go to search around the deli, her house, the nearby woods where she played sometimes. We know that Wanda was seen by some of her classmates. She did leave the store. She did collect those groceries. And what they remember is that she was having a hard time carrying them. She was walking and a brown car drove by, but nobody saw her get in necessarily. But they didn't see her after that. And then her body is found the next day in Webster, which was 17 miles away. She's at the bottom of a hill. It's very similar. You know, Carmen had been found in a gully. And it looked like the way that the body was positioned, they posit that somebody threw her out of the car as they were driving by. Mm-hmm. She also had been sexually assaulted. She also had been strangled. She had defensive wounds. But she had all her clothes on, unlike Carmen. So, but they think that after she was assaulted, whoever had done this to her had dressed her. They do find semen and pubic hair on her body. So they file that away. But it's the 70s. There's not a lot they can do with it.
Yeah.
They also found white cat fur on her clothes. And they didn't own a cat or anything. They issue another big reward for any information that anyone has. Mm-hmm. They put up a hotline, and somebody calls the hotline and says that they saw a man that was taking a girl that matches Wanda's description into a light colored Dodge between 5:30 and 6, which would have lined up with the grocery run, but they can't, it's not like enough information. They can't find the car. What they do is they broadcast all this information on TV. But that doesn't, it, you know, a lot of people call in after that, but none of it's real leads.
Yeah.
And then 7 months pass, and 11-year-old Michelle Menza.
No.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you know where this is going. She left school. It's 3:20. She's walking to a mall to try to grab a purse that her mom had left at the mall earlier. So again, an errand for her parents. And
Do you keep saying that because of how it makes you feel as a parent? Are you saying that like that?
Well, I'm going to use it defensively to say I'm never going to make Ko run me an errand because the guilt if something happens to him is not worth it.
Horrifying.
Run your own errands.
That's horrifying to think that.
No,
as a
I'm
parent.
Not blaming the parents.
No,
I
don't think you are blaming your parents. I was asking you because I think it means you have sympathy for the parents because I think it's like you see this and you just it's devastating to lose a child, but to think
it's
that you had any part. Or that you could not contributed or anything, but you know what I mean, that you are a part of the narrative in any way is really a chance.
It's
I can't
horrifying.
Imagine.
It's horrifying. They don't need any reasons to doubt themselves because their grief must be immense. So someone, again, there's a witness that saw Michelle, they believe saw Michelle sitting in a beige or tan vehicle. So we sort of have this beige or tan or brown vehicle theme. They think that they saw her with a man that was between 25 and 35, 6 feet tall at a fast food restaurant. Another person says that, and they say that was around 4:30. Mm-hmm. At 5:30 that evening that she had gone missing, somebody's driving by and says that they see a guy standing by a car, beige or tan, flat tire. It's in the town of Walworth, and he is holding a girl that is with him, that they're like, it could have been Michelle for sure. And this driver actually does stop and says, I see you have a flat. Can I help you? And says the guy that has the girl kind of pulls her behind his back. Like his body language is weird and he's pulling her away and he's like, no, no. And he really doesn't want help. He deliberately, it seems to this driver, obscured the license plate of his own car while they're talking and is trying to obscure his view of this child. And I think it drives me crazy because this person did stop. A bunch of people didn't for Carmen.
Yeah.
And you want to say, like, good for you for stopping. But I also feel like his blink went off and then he left. And it's like,
I think in those moments, you're like, it's, that's so hard. That's so hard.
It's so hard. So Michelle is found 2 days after she goes missing outside Rochester and Mayston. She's lying in a ditch. Same story. She had been assaulted, strangled, cat fur also on her clothes, partial print on her neck, semen. They remember somebody saw her eating fast food, and when they do an autopsy, they find that she had eaten a hamburger with onions about an hour before she had been killed. So it does feel like
we want
to think that what maybe happened is this person did abduct her, did take her to a fast food restaurant before everything else happened. But now we have three pre-adolescents that were running errands near their home for adults in their lives. They were all the same age, 10 and 11. They all disappeared the same time of day, like afternoon, early evening. All their bodies were discovered within 20 miles of the town. Each body had been, you know, killed the same way, it seems. They were all Catholic. They all didn't have dads. All these girls, they are in their home, I should say.
Do you feel like it's becoming like that this person was targeting this certain type of child or like...
Well, it's very... it's very strange, the similarities. All of their moms were on welfare. All of the girls, when people would describe them, were talked about as kind of loners. And I want to really say that even though experts have been questioned to say, what about the next thing that I'm going to tell you? Experts are like, drop it. That's not a thing. But I have to tell you, this has been labeled the series of alphabet murders. And the reason why is that Carmen Colon is a double C name.
Mm-hmm.
Her body was found in Churchville. Wanda Walkovitz was found in Webster. Michelle Menza was found in Mayston. So there was a supposition by certain people that looked at this.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a conspiracy theory that they say.
Well, it's like, is it a coincidence?
Was this person targeting... double, you know, the same consonant name, and then deliberately leaving their bodies in towns outside Rochester with the same starting initial. It's very, very odd.
The coincidence of it, the three, I mean, two might be a coincidence, but three feels like a pattern. I think we, you know, heard that before.
There's a true crime writer that says, I believe the killer is a pedophile who's in a car looking for girls of a certain age, walking alone and unobserved. The abductions were opportunistic and they had nothing to do with how the victims spelled their names.
Mm-hmm.
The modus operandi of Carmen's murder is different. Not only because she was found partially nude and the other two girls were clothed, but she had all those scratch marks on her body and they did not.
If it is the same, it could just be someone who attacked first and learned from it, unfortunately.
Yes, but the strongest case they ever had for Carmen was her uncle. And they were like, we think it could have been her uncle, Miguel, because a few weeks before this happened to her, he bought a car that sounds a lot like the car that she was seen in. And the fact that she said, I gotta go at the pharmacy and then left and got into a car, it sounds much more willing.
Yeah.
It did seem like it was, with her, it felt like she got abducted by someone she knew. The other thing is they searched his car after all this happened and it had been cleaned like crazy, which was a little weird because it's a new car.
Yeah.
And he'd used all these really powerful cleaning agents on it. And then 2 days after her body was found, he told somebody he was friends with, I got to leave because I did something wrong. And he left and he went to Puerto Rico. And then when they found him in Puerto Rico, he like ran from the authorities. They were like, you got to come back to Rochester and answer some questions. He doesn't have an alibi. Then he ends up killing himself in 1991. And by the way, before he kills himself, there was a big incident where he shot and wounded his wife and his brother. So he's, you know, a violent person that perpetrates violence on his own family members. This we know. We'll never know if he was the one that did that to Carmen, but it's very odd, the, like, leaving right after and all this. There were other suspects for, I guess you could say, for all the murders, but really for the other two, if you think that Miguel is the person that hurt Carmen. Mm-hmm. There was a 25-year-old firefighter named Dennis Termini. He's known as the garage rapist. He raped 14 women and young girls in the same years this happened, 1971 to 1973. He also drove a beige car. After Michelle had died, he tried to kidnap a little girl and she kept screaming. And so I guess he let go of her and the police chased him. He ends up killing himself. They check out that car that matches our description. White cat hair inside.
Whoa.
So that's a really strong probability. There was also a serial killer named Kenneth Bianchi who was driving an ice cream truck at the time. Horrifying in Rochester.
Oh, God.
And he definitely worked near some of the scenes that these girls were abducted near. And he also drove a brown car. So you're like, is it this guy? The big thing, the big problem is that the DNA that they got from these scenes was destroyed because they didn't know they were going to be able to use it for anything. So the only DNA they have is DNA that was found on Wanda. For whatever reason, that DNA they still have. And so they can look at it, but they tested it against the garage rapist and it's not his for sure.
This is devastating. These poor families, these poor girls.
Right. And it's also scary because when you're reading this case, they just keep introducing
more
scary
suspects.
People that could have done it. And you're like, and it's not even like scary people were like, this guy's a creep. They're like, this guy's a serial rapist of children. And you're like, oh, my God. Like, why are there so many bad guys that could have done this? In April of 2011, they end up arresting a guy named Joseph Naso because he did murder four women in California. And they like him for it because their names had the same thing. All the four women.
Oh, wow.
First initial, last initial. And he lived in Rochester in the 70s. Could this guy be the one?
Right.
But here's the one thing that they do say about this. His victims and the girls that, the little girls that we talked about.
Yeah.
They were all born around 1960. And if you look at that time, it was just a little bit like in vogue to give your kid an alliterative name somehow.
Oh.
Like not powerfully enough that we would like call it out. But you know how you can like look at, you know how you meet like 100 Otises? They're like all the same age. It's like that kind of thing where you're like, the Emma was really big this year. There's a bunch of Emmas.
I just want to be very clear. I've never met 100 Otises. I think I just
Otis is a cute name though. But you know what I mean? It's like
you're, baby you're fever. Gonna, what's going on? You're like, that's a good name. I like that name. Felix. We like Otis.
Well, it was the era of Marilyn Monroe and Brigitte Bardot. So it was just like a lot of people were like, this is cool.
Yeah.
I don't think Naso ever said, oh, yeah, that's why I killed those women. I don't think that was how he was profiling them. And his DNA is also not a match to the DNA they got off Wanda. So you're like, okay, I can see why you wanted it to be that guy. It's not him. I read this crazy article in Newsweek that they were like, a 76-year-old man that was serving 25 years for rape of an 11-year-old got released because they were like, he's not a danger anymore to the public. And it put this case back in the spotlight for some reason. Mm-hmm. But they didn't mention who that man was. So I feel like basically all you need to know, unsolved. They never did pin in on anybody. They have all these theories about who it could have been. And even as early as recent, I mean, this was the 70s. As recently as 2022, somebody on TikTok said they thought it was their grandpa and that he had a car like that and that he worked at a deli nearby or something or owned a grocery store and that white cats used to prowl the grocery and they had this whole theory that it was their grandpa that did it. So
they must really not like their grandpa.
I was like, I don't want to be at that Thanksgiving.
No, that's awkward family reunion.
Very rough.
Hey, so I saw the TikTok where you thought grandpa
accused me of
children
and raping and murdering children. Yeah, not great.
Kind of awkward. Here's his wife. Here's grandma.
point. Yeah. Well, it's just a really sad, I mean, when you break it down, it's just, it's sad and it's horrible. It definitely seems like, if I had to guess, I would say that Wanda and Michelle had the same killer, and that Carmen, I think it was her uncle, but it's really sad that Wanda and Michelle and Carmen, that they did, nobody ever,
there's been no
time.
Justice. Yeah, there's been no justice for them. And it's been no justice for the people that are mourning these young girls who had their whole lives ahead of
God.
Them.
I didn't write it down, but I did read, like, one of the parents was so like, I just want to know, like, this is so horrible to not even know who did this to my child. Ugh. What a nightmare.
Also, the amount
sorry
of
that
people
I had to
that
tell you
didn't
that.
Stop. It feels a little bit like, what is
yes,
the, what is
that's
the,
Kitty Genovese, but yeah, they proved that was wrong. And it's like, you want a Kitty Genovese. I think, and here's another thing. I think like race plays a big role in this stuff too. Yeah. And money. And I think that Kitty was a really fun story because she was like a pretty young white girl. And everyone was like, can you believe? And I just think if you want to tell that story and have the moral be here, where people watching a crime and they didn't stop, can we have it be about Carmen Colon? Because that's a much better example.
Yeah.
It's much clearer and it's much more heartbreaking.
It's crazy to me. What's crazy to me is the people that came forward after and gave testimony as to what they saw. I think that to me, like, I'm impressed that people came forward, frankly, because I think there'd be a lot of shame if you're like, was it that? Was it that? And I, like, you know, I'd be, because people just drove by and didn't, there's no cameras, there's nothing to make them, the fact that people felt like, okay, now they have to say something. I mean, but I feel like we've all been there where we're like, should we have done that? Should we have stopped? And then you hear something, you're like, I guess I have to come forward now because I'm never going to sleep again.
Yeah, and I think they realized if they had any information that would lead to this person's arrest, they really needed to come forward. But, we don't know any of their names. It's not like...
Yeah. And the person that's at fault
and were allowed
to
remain anonymous.
Yeah.
To be honest, I would imagine it haunts them.
Yeah.
Till they
I can't imagine
are dead.
It wouldn't.
Like,
I cannot imagine it wouldn't. I think it's horribly traumatizing for everyone. And it's so heartbreaking that these poor little girls.
Yeah. And to see a child in danger and not.
Oh God. It's the worst. And, even as something as like, I remember walking and, you see a kid maybe be treated poorly by a parent, and those moments where you're like, do I say something? What do
you
do?
Can I tell you, I had this nanny I used to really love. She wasn't really a nanny. She was a babysitter because I was older when I had her, and she was so cool. Like, I wanted to do everything like her. She was a lawyer. She went to Sarah Lawrence, and her name was Megan, and I was like, oh, Megan's so cool, and she talks to me like I'm a grown-up. And I remember her telling me a story. She came to sit for me one night, and I was probably like 12 or 13, and she was like, oh, the craziest thing happened on my way here. And I lived in a really nice neighborhood in Denver, like a pretty affluent neighborhood with nice homes. And she walked by our neighbor's house and heard a kid screaming. And she said, I just didn't like the tone. You know, sometimes you can tell what kind of screaming it is. It's like a tantrum or it's they hurt themselves or whatever. She said, I didn't like the kind of screams I was hearing.
God.
So I went and I rang the doorbell. And I said, hey, I can hear your kid screaming. I just wanted to check and make sure they were all right. And the parents were so like, what? What are you? And it sounds like a really awkward moment where she we see something on the subway and we don't see something. She went full speed ahead up to their door.
Yeah.
And their private property and was like, I want to see this. I want to lay eyes on your child. I mean, but I was like, whoa,
that's cool. So intense and like, very cool.
Like, talk about following your blink on behalf of someone in a less powerful position, you know? I was like, that's amazing.
That's so intense.
I got my internship, which is going to be with elementary kids, and I have to go get fingerprinted tomorrow for it, and I'm so excited.
Wait, Quinn! Wait a minute. Wait. Okay. Tell me more. This is so exciting. So you're going to work with elementary school kids in an internship setting?
Yeah. My internship is going to be to assist a school therapist and a guidance counselor and work with elementary school kids. And I'm like way psyched about it. Like crazy excited.
Quinn, that's insane. Isn't that awesome? And amazing and incredible, and you're going to be great. You're going
to
be so amazing.
I do have to pay for myself to get fingerprinted, which you're kind of
How
like...
How much is it?
Not to be a dick, but like, you guys are getting free labor for the whole year from me. Can somebody just pick up the fucking tab on this fingerprinting?
How much is the fingerprinting?
I don't know. I think it's like $150.
What?
I know. It's like way more than you think it should be.
That's fucked. I don't like that. I don't like that at all.
They got to run me. They got to run me through.
Run you through. And while they're running you through, let's hear from our sponsors. Okay. I'm telling a story about a mother and a daughter, too.
Oh, okay.
I got this information from People. God love it. News 5 Cleveland, NBC News, WYKYC, Akron Beekman Journal, and shout out to Bix Betwee, Business Insider.
Woo woo.
We love to do it. We love to call it out. So I want to introduce you to Sidney Powell. Now, the name Sidney Powell will probably sound familiar.
I do really like that you call out Bix, because it makes it sound like Bix is the author of the article
I
you
stand
read.
By
and
it.
He's definitely not.
He's not. He probably, it did come out in like 2024.
Dear readers, she's doing a shout out to Business Insider's lawyer. Just because we know him.
We know
no
him.
Other reason.
If I know you, I'm going to shout you out.
He okayed this being published at some point.
This came out in 2024, and I'm sure either he
that
or someone he
desk.
Works with fact-checked it, okay?
Great.
And so
we
I feel
it.
Like, thank you so much, you know? I mean, we used to have fact-checkers at Crime of a Lifetime, and obviously we don't anymore. So what's nice
check
is
check your facts yourself.
What's
B-Y-O-C-F.
Really fun...
B-Y-O-C-F. Bring your own check facts. Check facts. Checked facts. Bring your own checked facts.
So, and I can't be bothered to check my facts consistently. So I'm going to thank Bix, but probably now that I'm doing that, I feel like I've indicted him and he's going to get in trouble at work. So you know what, Bix, I'm so sorry. We'll hang out next time I'm in town. Okay. So, Sidney Powell. Now the name Sidney Powell sounds familiar because I don't know if you remember the name of Trump's attorney who was like trying to steal the election in 2020 was also named Sidney Powell, but I'm not talking about that Sidney Powell. I'm talking about 19-year-old Sidney Powell. She is 19 and she's attending Mount Union University. Her mom is Brenda Powell. She's 50 years old, and Brenda, all-star, she's a child life specialist at Akron Children's Hospital, specifically for childhood cancer and blood disorder. And she's been doing that work for 30 years. Party.
God's work.
And the two of them get along. They're like, you know, friends. I don't know. Like, it does eke me out when people are like, we're like Gilmore Girls. I don't think they were Gilmore Girl vibes, but I do think that they were like, they got along. There's no evidence to the contrary. However, Sydney's having a hard time at school and her grades are bottoming out. And sadly, she gets kicked out of school. Now, I don't know if you remember where you were at 19 years old, but if you got kicked out of school, how afraid would you be to tell your mom?
I can't. No.
Fucking terrified. There's no way. There's no way.
I'm trying to actually think like what I would do.
Yeah. What would you do?
That would be so crazy. I guess I would light myself on fire. I don't know.
You know what I mean? Like, you'd be like, this is bad. This is bad. I can't. And at 19, like, you can't. You're still a kid. Okay. You're still a child. Mm-hmm. You can't totally think of like consequences of like, I'm sure my mom will love me. She's worked sort like, so you're in a state of panic. And so she gets kicked out of school and she's not telling her mom. Okay.
Sure.
And so she's like dragging her feet.
What
she's,
did Jennifer do? Am I right? You know?
You know what I mean? So it's March 3rd, 2020. We are on the cusp of a pandemic about to hit, but it's March 3rd, 2020. And ring, ring, ring. Sydney is home and Brenda gets a call. She picks up the phone and it is school officials from Mount Union University.
No.
Presumably to inform Brenda that their daughter is no longer attending the university.
Right.
And so we don't know exactly what happened, but Sydney, what we don't know exactly what happened. What we do know is what the school officials will testify as to what they heard happen. So they call, Brenda picks up, they all of a sudden hear a kerfuffle. They hear Brenda screaming. They hear 6 or 7 thudding sounds. The phone goes dead. Mm-hmm. They're freaked the fuck out. They're like, okay, let's call back. Let's call back. So they call back like multiple times. A woman picks up and says, it's Brenda. But the voice on the other end, they're like, what? That's not, and they go, and the voice says, yes, this is Brenda. Yes, this is Brenda. And the two people, Deans or whatever, are like looking at each other on the other line. And they're like, it was not Brenda. They were sure it was Sydney. And so the dean of students look at each other. They sort of like shake their heads. And they said on the phone, this is not Brenda. He said, Sydney, is this you? This is not Brenda. The phone goes dead. They immediately call the police. When the police arrive at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, they find Sydney on the driveway. Her eyes are rolled to the back of her head. She is clawing at the asphalt and her fingers are bleeding. And they say she is not responding to audio stimuli or any prompts, and that she is essentially in a catatonic state. When they enter the home, they see it look sort of like a break-in. The police see Brenda. She is covered in blood. She is badly hurt. She has blunt force trauma to the head, and she has stab wounds in her neck. They take her to the hospital. The hospital that she works around, she works at the children's hospital. They take her to the hospital. She does not survive. She dies. When they go and investigate the scene, they see again that this crime scene, this quote break-in, was clearly staged. And they realize, because Sydney has blood all over her, that it was Sydney that had attacked her mother. What they believe happened is that she hit her mother over her head with an iron cast iron skillet multiple times. She grabbed a steak knife and stabbed her mother in the neck 30 times.
So I wouldn't do that is something I want to say. If I was needed to tell my mom that I dropped out of school,
yeah,
or got kicked out, yeah, that would not be.
That's not your MO. Mm-hmm. I think that's fair. I think I can't lie.
It's so crazy because I'm like, yeah. What? In the sense that I'm like, when you first asked that question, what was going through my head is like how much I love my mom and how much I want her to respect me and be proud of me.
Yeah.
The idea that. And that would be where my fear would be coming from. The idea that I would then murder my mother and is not in the realm of getting in trouble would do to me.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's, I think, what makes this case so puzzling.
Yeah.
Is but again, we're going to get to her defense, which is insanity, and that she has some mental health issues. So
okay.
To be clear, I wasn't able to find any sort of violence between the two of them. Right. And Sydney's attorney would later claim they were, quote, best friends, which I think an attorney, of course, is going to say that about a parent. I don't know their dynamic. What I do know is that the police haven't been called to their home for any sort of like violent outburst or anything like that. Sydney will claim later that she only has flashes of the day. She remembers hearing voices, having some delusions, crying, and feeling the need to get away. She says she recalls sitting on the couch next to her mom. She remembers crying. She remembers mm-hmm. feeling like she needs to get away and going down to the basement and coming back up. She recalls voices in her head calling her a loser, saying she's worthless, telling her to kill herself. And the next thing she remembers is waking up at the hospital. Now, they immediately charge her. I've covered a case like this before, which is so traumatic because the family member of the victim are also the family members of the perpetrator, right? We know Sydney did this. There's no denying that she committed this crime. The question is like, what are the circumstances around it? Her dad, you know, Brenda's husband and Brenda's family, they're saying, hey, we want Sydney to get help. Clearly she's not okay. There's some mental health distress. We do not want to proceed to trial. They were like, please don't charge her with murder. Her dad begs the prosecutors not to proceed with murder charges against Sydney. And he says that he believes it was an episode of psychosis. So later I will say that the defense has three expert witnesses that will diagnose her with schizophrenia. And her father at the pretrial had said, I don't know why we're doing this. This isn't what anyone wants here. I don't know how she can handle it. I don't know how I can handle it. I'm trying to keep my family together.
Ugh.
the prosecutors are saying, you know, we can't listen to the family to decide how to try a case. And yeah. we would like justice for Brenda Powell. She's not here to tell us what she wants. And it's, again, it's a pretty convoluted thing. It's like her family, her husband, everybody's coming to their daughter's, the surviving member's defense. So her defense goes the insanity route. So like I said, she was diagnosed with schizophrenia by three defense experts who evaluated her. And they all concluded that she did not comprehend the wrongness of her actions due to her mental disorder. However, the prosecution brings a witness who responds to this claim, stating that in her opinion, it doesn't add up to schizophrenia at the time of the incident, right? Like they could maybe diagnose her after, but she's not able to use the mental illness as a defense because we don't know her mental state at the time of the incident.
Right.
Prosecutors will argue that her going from a cast iron to a knife and continuing there was purpose, there was intent. The defense will claim that the same cast iron and knife, the severity, the brutality of the attack would actually indicate insanity, right? So it's mm-hmm. like, which do you side with? Prosecutors also use the fact that after she killed her mother, she broke a window, and her first defense is that she claims someone broke in and attacked her mom. So that raises some questions of how with it was she that she was able to sort of stage, albeit shittily, she was able to stage the crime.
Mm-hmm.
And then she's found at the end of the driveway in this catatonic state. So they go to trial. This all happens. Cindy is found guilty of murder, felonious assault, and tampering with evidence. The family at sentencing continues to come to her defense. They ask for leniency. Again, they're like, why did you try her? Please stop. Stop. The pain is enough. What's interesting is at the sentencing, Sydney's defense attorney brought a letter from a doctor who worked with her mother, who worked with Brenda at the Akron Children's Hospital. Which, you know, is just interesting because it also has a little bit of, like, it's not her family. But I want to read part of this letter because I found it to be so, frankly, interesting, which is, this is the letter. I have almost never felt so strongly that I need to offer a voice of advocacy as I have in this tragic situation of an unfathomable verdict and the tragic current of ripple effects it will undoubtedly have upon this loving family. I have repeatedly heard from those who know Brenda well, their intimate knowledge of Brenda, her family, her husband, and Sydney, that they have endured incredible loss as a result of Sydney's actions on that horrible day. Even so, it is literally beyond words and many people's comprehension how tremendously loving they have been and remain towards Sydney in their clear knowledge of her mental illness and impairment, and the powerful clarity that Brenda herself, if she were still alive, would without a doubt want the unwavering support of Sydney's continued treatment for her mental condition in the least restrictive environment possible with as much family connection and contact as is possible. Even with all of this want from the family, who's also the family of the victim, she is sentenced to life in prison. She will be eligible for parole after serving 15 years of her life sentence, and as of this year, June 2024, she's filed an appeal. They would like her to serve her sentence in a mental health facility. And they said that since being arrested, she has been undergoing treatment and has improved. But it's this absolutely tragic story. You know, we'll never know the truth of what happened that day, right?
Right.
And it is a hard case to sort of, from my end, determine how I feel. I think it's, yeah, it's just a hard case, but with the facts that I found, it just sounds really tragic, and I don't know what the right answer is.
No, that's so horrible.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh, to be that family and, like, lose both.
To lose both, and this 19-year-old girl, I mean, again, the, like, staging of the crime scene is tough, right? Like,
yeah.
That's yeah. That is a tough.
The whole thing's pretty tough. Yeah. I got to tell you, but it's tricky because the life in prison, you killed somebody.
Yeah.
But she's not actually probably a danger to anyone. It's such a particular instance, right? I don't know. It's
and
wild.
Also, it's like, you
and
know,
just like this country's reluctance to like provide mental health over jailing, right?
Yeah, yeah. And I think it's like you have three defense witnesses, expert witnesses, who spoke in her defense that she was mentally ill and unable to comprehend the severity of her crime at the time. And you have one prosecutorial witness that says, you know what? No. I mean, mental health is really fucking hard.
The bigger thing to me is, I know it's not how we do things, but it does feel like the closest thing to a justice is like just saying, can we just ask the family what they want? Because my God.
I know, but you know what? That's an issue too, because we, as we know, the family sometimes will want retribution and a head on a platter. And for that reason, we cannot ask the family what they want. But then you have these very unique situations where the family is coming to the defense of the perpetrator. And just like we wouldn't want the family to decide someone to be put to death, or just because they believe they're guilty doesn't necessarily conclude mm-hmm. that they are in fact guilty. It's like you have, this is the direct inverse of that, you yeah. know? And I think more often than not, it's probably that the family wants an eye for an eye, you know? Mm-hmm. And so mm-hmm. you can't just do it when it feels like the family is. But yeah, it does feel like, wait, can we just listen to them this one time? Can we just
like, what a day they've had? Can we give them back anything that will make them feel less this?
Totally. And I often think about, like, God, this is like a bit of a tangent, when we talk about war, right? Or when I talk about war, and it's like, I hear often from people when people are discussing, quote, defending themselves in wartime, it's like, if something happened to you, I'd fucking kill, or I'd kill for you. Like, I'd kill anyone who hurt you. And it's always those moments where I'm like, that's why people shouldn't decide. Mm. That's why we have a criminal justice system, or, you know, anyway, I just...
Yeah, that it shouldn't be people close to the crime
shouldn't
that,
be
make
people
decisions.
That make those
I
decisions.
That.
And I think sometimes, oftentimes in war, that is able 19. To, it's able to
I
justify.
I can't shake that, the 19 thing.
She's
so
19.
What year was she sentenced?
2024.
Oh, this was brand new.
This is brand
so
new.
She just went to jail. Okay.
Yeah. The
like,
crime
so
was
curious,
committed
like,
in 2020.
Where is she now? But I guess she's in jail right now.
She's in jail and
on
appeal.
Still a kid. Wild. Well, guys, it's a weird way to end.
It's a weird way to end. Do you want to have?
It is an end.
I'm trying to think if there's any like fun. Oh,
tell me something. Anything?
Yeah, I'll tell you something. So this is my dad's alarm clock. Hold on. And I've heard it.
Well, good, a visual gag.
Well, no,
just
it's gonna.
What we need
it's actually
to
a
get
sound
us out
gag.
Of this one.
It's a sound gag.
Oh, thank God.
Okay, so in case you want to know a little bit about me, when I was young, my dad would get up early to go to work, and this is the alarm I would hear every day.
Wake up! You're going to miss your tea time.
What the fuck?
Wake up! You're going to miss your tea time.
And it's golf club swing, a sound effect. Well,
so
that seems really disappointing if you're not headed to tea time, as they say. But
so imagine
also,
just
what a cute alarm clock. The dear readers can't see, but my God.
It's a, it looks like a little Monopoly man with a little cute little hat.
Wait, I'll take a picture for the socials when this comes out. Cute.
So that, just so you know, that I just have, like, you know that feeling when you're on your iPhone, or not iPhone, sorry, this is not a ad. Well, you know that feeling where your alarm wakes you up and you're like, I can't listen to that same, because you memorize the alarm
mm-hmm.
that you have to hear?
Mm-hmm.
That is
so... I change mine up all the time.
That is, but that is because we didn't have that luxury when we were younger. That is so ingrained in me, that sound effect, that mm-hmm. it is a part of who I am.
Yeah, mine looked like a box of Crayola crayons, and when the alarm would go off, the lid would come up, and you'd, to a reveal, a visual reveal of all the fake crayons inside, but I can't remember the noise, weirdly. I just remember the crayons.
Weird. I've never liked waking up to an alarm, and here's my brag. I don't wake up with an alarm.
You wake up with the sun?
No, I just wake up because I don't have any commitments.
said the woman with no children.
Exactly.
All
right.
Well, that hurts.
Exactly. Because you don't have
gut punch.
You don't have an alarm. Do you have an alarm?
I have an alarm. I actually get up before my family, especially.
That's smart.
You know what? When we were in North Fork, we all just got up together and everyone slept late. It was fabulous. And now Coe's in camp this week. So I've got an alarm and I got to get up and do the sack lunch and the breakfast and then go wake him. And Griff sleeps the whole time. And then I take Coe to camp and Griff's still asleep.
God, I want Griff's life, man.
Yeah. He's got a good life.
Got a good life. He's got a good life.
All right, let's, you know what? Same time, same place next week.
Yeah, same time, same place next week. See you then.
Bye.
Bye, dear readers.
This podcast is supported by Talkspace.
When my husband came home from his military deployment, readjusting was hard for all of us. Thankfully, I found Talkspace.
Talkspace provides professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatric providers online. Military members, veterans, and their dependents ages 13 and older can get fast access to providers, all from the privacy of their computers or smartphones.
I just answered a few questions online, and Talkspace matched me with a therapist. We meet when it's convenient for me, and I can message her anytime. It was so easy to set up, and they accept TRICARE. Therapy was going so well, my husband and I started seeing a couples therapist through Talkspace, too.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, including TRICARE. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com/military. Go to Talkspace.com/military to get started today. That's Talkspace.com/military.